Welcome to Threshold Stories, crossing thresholds one story at a time. I'm your host, Jeff Gora.
Hey everybody, podcast 110. Welcome to Threshold Stories, personal stories of people crossing their thresholds one story at a time. Except today we're not going to do one story at a time. We're going to do four stories at a time. I've got a couple of people on this call who all participated in our Spain cycling tour in Parcent, Spain just 2 weeks ago. And guys who are on the call, the lady in yellow, the guy in the vest, the guy in the dark shirt in the dark room, who the heck are you guys? Tell the audience who you are.
Hi, Jeff and everybody. My name is Angela Richard. I am here in Charlotte, North Carolina. So who am I? A little bit about me. I've been a competitor all my life. I love physical activity, anything that challenges me. And so here I am today, here with Threshold Academy. And like I said, I'm here in Charlotte, and I'm here to talk a little bit more about Spain.
Hey, everyone, I'm Jordan. What's funny is I used to think I was a pretty good athlete until I met Jeff Gora, who made me get on a bicycle. And then I realized I'm not a good athlete at all. A lot of work to do. But I live in Colorado, and it's been a really fun training with these guys on traveling the world with them.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Connor Hogan. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. And I, similar to Angela and Jordan, am a competitor. I played soccer all growing up, played through college. And then when I graduated, have just been finding things that really interest me and that I love and are really hard. And so right now that's triathlon, that's duathlon, cycling, running. And I had the pleasure of being in Spain with this group.
So let me kind of just jump to it. So you guys spent a week with my wife and I and my son in Spain, taking on the world, really. What did you think you guys were getting into when you signed up to do this trip? Angela, let's go with you. You did a great job going first last time.
Sure. Jeff, when I signed up for this, I needed something to get me out of the physical rut that I was in at the time. I had had a knee replacement in December of 2020. So that whole year before that, I was lucky if I could walk a mile a day because of my knee. I needed something. I needed something big to motivate me, and I was ready to put in the work. So I really didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't, honestly. I put my trust in you when you said, yes, it is possible for you to do the cycle tour if you train for it. So that's all I knew.
So what stories have you told your loved ones about this trip before you actually did it?
Yeah, and see, it's interesting. I guess I didn't say a whole lot. I just said, I'm going on a cycling tour in Spain. And they really didn't understand what that meant because even so.
Well, yeah, it's a trail. I'm going on a cycling tour of Spain. You get quiet at the end. No one went.
Yeah.
Angela, what did you say? Can you say that again, please?
Yeah. A couple of them, it was funny. They said, I hope you win. I think they meant that I was competing, right?
Oh, that's great.
I was going to be one of the pro cyclists out there, but that wasn't it at all. And so they were just really excited for me. Because they know my competitive background, this wasn't that big of a surprise, but they were all totally amazed that I did it.
Cool. So Connor, speaking of competitive background and professional cyclists that people thought Angela might be dealing with, what did you think was going to happen when you signed up for this?
Jeff, you really sold the experience to us in the sense of you are going to cycling paradise. This is where the pros train. Incredible mountain views. You are going to see you're going to go to the beach, you're going to see the Mediterranean, there's going to be great cafe stops where you'll drink delicious coffee, and that's going to be really hard. It's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to see it. You're going to go up a lot of mountains and descend a lot of mountains. And when you told me that, I was like, oh, that's great. You know, the cycling season is getting underway. I'm really not sure we're going to see any pros, but it's nice to think that they also train there. And so the first day we got there and we got our bikes, we just rode, a kilometer down the road to the local, like literally 1K to the bike cafe. And I said to the owner who was making my cup of coffee, has anyone interesting come today? And he was like, well, Matthew Vanderpool is just sitting over there about an hour ago. And I was like, pardon me? And it just really hit home that this is cycling paradise. You know, Matthew Vanderpool is not going to come to a second rate part of the world to recover from an injury to prepare for all of the races he's going to do this year. And to know that it, not just him, but lots of other pros were in the area recently, and there were some still there. We passed several times. Peter Sagan's brother, I don't remember his name. I call him Brother Sagan, but Nelson certainly knew because he's such a fan and wealth of knowledge for cycling. But yeah, that was really the expectation I had. And I couldn't have been more surprised on day one to sort of hit all three of those, you know, the views, cool, the cafe, and the pros being in the area.
So Jordan, what about you? What did you think you were getting into when you said, I'm going to go cycling in Spain with this group, with this guy?
Yeah. What's most interesting, Jeff, is what you didn't sell me on, right? Like, you talked all about the views and how beautiful it is, but you did say how much we would learn to like each other and learn to train and trust each other and create like sort of this team sense, like this camaraderie, where I now feel really close to Angela, Connor, and everyone else on the trip. And I didn't even know them before. I mean, Connor, we've known each other for less than a year, but I feel like I know you so much better now because of that shared suffering. I was suffering. You were probably fine. but you know, the coolest part,
I watched Connor stand up from the table one time, and that was not the standing up motion of a man who was in good condition.
It's funny though, right? Sometimes you have to go halfway across the world to find something you could have found at home.
Cool. Well, you're staring at the core of mine and my wife's identity and how she takes ownership over all things hospitality. And I take ownership over all things of that break hospitality, meaning I challenge you and take you to a limit. So let's jump to adversity, because I feel like if you don't talk about adversity, you're not telling the truth. This place gets, on average in the month of March, 20 millimeters of rain. So for perspective's sake, that's about 3/4 of an inch for the whole month of March. According to the Post reports, we had somewhere between 4 and 7 inches in about 72 hours when we were there, right? So that would be adversity. Yet you guys, I still challenged all of you to get on your bikes and go out on the rain. Talk us through what you were thinking when it was cold and wet and I said, we're going biking. Angela, you go first.
Initially, I thought to myself, this is a bit wild. Once we got going, I said, this is kind of
That's
wild.
Too polite. And what did you really think?
Slightly dangerous.
There you go.
But I was relying. I was relying on the leader of our group to make the call on whether we should continue, right? And and sure enough, Alex, who is the leader of our group, made the call shortly thereafter to return once he started to see the rain pick up. But in general, I mean, Jeff, it felt refreshing to be back on the bike after we had spent a few days traveling and then a few days down. It's just that quick moment of getting out there, getting down the road and coming back just kind of got me prepared for what was next to come for the next few days.
So Connor, you had a conversation with me about the adversity associated with cycling that you really hadn't taken a bite out of because your cycling geography was so limited before this trip. Reiterate that conversation with people.
Well, that, and whenever there was bad weather, I would just ride on the trainer, right? Like all through the winter when it's really cold or it might be icy on the roads, I'm just going to be inside on the bike trainer. And so I had never really needed to experience, I never put myself in that position to be getting absolutely soaked in the freezing rain, descending a mountain. And so that for me, I mean, I just, when you said we were going to go, I couldn't stop thinking about how cold that was going to be. I was just walking around like, this is crazy. Let's just go for a long run. You know, we're duathletes. We can't cycle. Let's shift over to a run. We've got plenty of
hills. I like this idea.
And yeah, Jordan would have really liked that. And so I'm walking around like, guys, let's just tell Jeff to go for a, like, we should just do a nice long run, you know? it's better to run in the rain than ride in the rain for me, because you stay warmer. And so it's going to be a little bit less horrible in my perspective. And I honestly found that once the first group left, so when Alex had let out the group with Ashley, or Angela, sorry, I was like, okay, well, I can't not go now because already half the group is gone. So it's like really shows bad on me if I'm not willing to go and everyone else is. So we went out and I mean, it still hurt. Like I Jordan and Nelson and a few others left probably 10 or 15 minutes before I did with you and Mike, Jeff. And I just did everything I could to catch up with them simply because I wanted to warm up. I was so cold.
Sure.
I was not prepared for it.
So Jordan, I'm going to switch topics and give you a different question than them. And the idea is we had a time trial up the Calderate. It's a category 2 climb, very famous in the Vuelta. The downside is just as challenging as the upside. And I had us do that in the rain. Oh, by the way, for the first time, walk us through what that was like for you. We did a little warm-up ride, and I'll let you describe what you think you want to conclude about that. And then we launched in 1 minute separations up the Calderate. Walk us through what that was like for you.
Yeah, my first thought was, this guy is crazy. Like, something's wrong with my coach, because no sane man would do this. But then I looked at one of the cyclists who's a 72-year-old man, and he wasn't complaining. He got on his bike and he left a minute before me. His name was Lenny. And I thought to myself, well, if this guy can do it, I could probably do it, right? I mean, I don't see why I can't. And thus the joke of the trip was born, which is Lenny and the Jets, because all of us suffered in the rain going up that mountain pass. And I was trying so hard not to let Connor catch me. And Connor, you had what? Like, you were right behind me, 10 seconds maybe.
Mm-hmm. I didn't catch you.
Oh, that was way too much effort. I was tired for 4 days after that.
Let's jump forward out of the bad weather, because people don't want to hear just about adversity here. Let's talk about the good stuff. So day one of the real cycling, okay? We do the Benny's loop, and we went through the algorithms with that. What are going to be your takeaways from that first day cycling in the sun, finishing a category 1 climb, descending through olives and Valencia oranges and cherry blossoms, all the way back into Parsnips? Connor, why don't you go first? Talk to us about your real Benny's experience, not Benny and the Jets, but the Benny's experience.
Yeah, Jeff, I rode with one hand most of the day because I spent so much time with my phone out taking photos and videos. I mean, I was the bona fide videographer for the group. I was constantly looking around thinking, I have to remember this. I've never seen something like this before in my life. Just the mountains and the valleys and the small little towns that we'd go through with the really old church spires. And, you know, I would just periodically smile to myself thinking how epic it was and that I never wanted to ride indoors again. And there were a couple of times that you actually came up alongside me, Jeff, and you were like, hey, Connor, you're in southern Spain riding through orange orchards. Just take that in. You know, like, don't miss the simplicity of the moment, but also how glorious it was. It was really, really special.
Angela, what about you?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. It was overwhelming at times because, but in a good way. I wanted to explore the stunning landscape with my eyes while I'm riding. But then it's our first time out, and I wanted to feel the rush of being on that bike because that's what we went for, right? And so, you know, I just wanted to live in the moment, see everything that I possibly could and feel every stroke of the pedal on my bike. It was just breathtaking. And I couldn't believe we were finally out riding through the small towns and the mountains of Spain. So it's just very breathtaking, that moment.
So Jordan, I'm going to put some pictures on the screen here about pictures I took of you with me. When we were doing the Benny's Loop, pausing, and just how smiley you were. Talk us about what you remember about how you felt going through the Benny's Loops.
You know, it was one of those moments where I had to just stop and let life just happen in front of me. You know, one of those pause, and you you smell the roses kind of moment. It was for the first time that I was riding with other people, training with others. I do most of my training alone. And so there was so much satisfaction with having a conversation on the bike, but also looking at what you can do with a bicycle. I had no idea you could actually do those kind of things. I'm like Connor, I do most of my training inside. And so to be able to ride through these orchards and these beautiful areas was breathtaking.
Mm. So we're now going to jump forward to the next following day when we did what Alex and I call the Confrides loop. And it starts with a climb up the Caldarates, which you'd already done in the rain. And then we get to the top of the Caldarates and we begin a descent on the backside into what I call the Tarbina Bowl. And I'm going to just ask you what was going through your mind as we descended into the Tarbina Bowl, because I think each of you need to tell your own story and not let me skew it. Jordan, you go first this time.
I was gripping on to my handlebars with all my might.
Angela's already nodding.
I know. I was trying so hard not to break. Like, I didn't, because you had told me, you're like, the pros don't break. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try to be a pro. And there was a couple turns.
Connor's nodding, no.
Yeah, and where I was getting the rattle, you know, I was getting the wobble. And I was like, nope, I have to break. I have to slow down. But what a rush. Oh, my gosh. So much fun.
Connor, what do you remember about that?
Yeah, you know, we had already attacked the Caldarates, and so this was relatively the start of that ride this day, the Confrides loop. And so we all just sort of took it at a nice, easy pace. We were trying to, you know, to hold back because we knew we had, you know, 50 plus miles ahead of us after we got to the top of the climb. So, you know, it was a don't be a hero situation. And so we were just enjoying that we could actually see on the way up. You know, the view as you go up the Caldarates is incredible, but when we had time trialed up it, it was in the pouring rain. So the clouds were sitting right in the mountain, there's no visibility. So we were all seeing that same route in a totally different way. And then when we got to the top and crested over, that's not something we had done the day before. So it was a whole new experience. Having just finished a very hard climb, it was a strange feeling to not have to pedal for like 30 minutes. Because you're just descending and descending and descending. And anytime there is a little bit of an uphill, there's enough momentum that you definitely don't need to pedal. So I'd never descended like that in my life. It was a little bit terrifying.
So what's he missing, really, Angela? You've been nodding. Angela, you've been nodding continuously as both of them have been talking. What are they missing?
Oh, geez. What are they missing? Not much, because I was going to say the same thing, you know, nothing that I had ever experienced either. And, you know, I'm gripping on so strong that it was my first time ever having upper body pain the day after from riding a bike, because I felt like just the grip. But I felt so strong doing that, though. I really did. And it was just a pure feeling of excitement. I just felt a sense of strength because I was doing it. And I thought, if my family and friends could see what I'm doing right now, and I'm like heading for these blocks, you know, that are these cement blocks that are the only thing standing between me and the, you know, the edge of the mountain, they would just be speechless. They'd think I'm crazy, but it's just, it's something that you go after, right? There's adrenaline and excitement there. And it was pretty amazing. Yeah.
So we're going to do another podcast just with Angela about what it's like to go from knee replacement to Spain, because that's, you know, hell to heaven in a succinct cell. So let's change topics to, you know, my wife's not on the call. Let's talk about hers. Talk to me about what you're going to remember about the food you got on this trip.
Give me a bocadillo. I am ready. Sign me back up. Every day for lunch, we'd stop at these amazing cafe spots. And I know that's not what you're asking about, Coach, but I'm going to get there. And we'd have amazing fresh baguettes with jamon. And what was the cheese, Connor? Some Spanish cheese?
Manchego.
Yeah, what he said. Amazing. And I was dying for lunch. There was one day, Connor, you and I tried to order two, and the guy wouldn't let us. Do you remember that? And he was like, no, one will do.
He's like, I promise you, one is going to be enough. You're not going to want two. They were huge.
They were huge. But I could have easily eaten two. What I loved in particular, though, is that Linda understands that we're all athletes. She understands the nutritional needs. So every time when we got back to the village, she had fresh pizza, She had hummus and veggies, just these wonderful snacks that would replenish us so we could relax and enjoy the evening, not to mention the great Spanish wine. Oh,
We did 70. You guys memorize this number, 70. That's the number of bottles of wine and beer we went through.
70?
Okay, I was like, if that's only bottles, that's incredible. But
wow,
cans of beer, that makes sense. Crazy.
Yeah, so, I just to hop on that, Jeff, I just wanted to say, you know, there was always enough. When it came to breakfast, I don't think any of us ever left breakfast feeling like we hadn't just eaten two meals. You know, there were just so many options that I'd eat
everybody's
a
nodding.
Bowl of oatmeal with walnuts and fresh berries and honey. And then I would want some of the yogurt that they had. And then I would want some of the fresh bread with Nutella. Like, there was always everything. And mm-hmm. I do have to give a special shout out to the local baker and winemaker of Parsen, Armando.
Same guy.
Who every morning, Crystal and I, my wife, we would go into town and we would pick up 6 loaves of bread, these, you know, long baguettes from Armando. And then in the evening, we would all enjoy the wine that he made. He was the only winemaker in Parsen. And so he really bookended our day without really knowing it. It was great.
Angela, my wife, said to me one time when we were having a conversation about our low point on the trip, she goes, "Oh my God, Angela never stops eating."
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I tell people, you know, I don't eat, I graze, right? I eat all day. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
But yeah, I mean, and anybody that knows me, Jeff, when they, if they knew me well, they know that I truly enjoy like delicious foods in their natural form. And so anytime I travel, I get really nervous, right? Because I don't know what my food options are going to be. So between the food that Fane had to offer and the meals that Linda put together, I had no reason for concern. I said our homemade meals were had so much depth of flavor. And like Connor said, they were so filling. But most importantly, I want to add, one of the biggest things I remember from those meals is the people that I shared them with. So gathering around the table, it was just, there was, you know, 15 of us, and we all gathered every morning, every afternoon, and we learned about each other and then just laughing and carrying on through that meal. And so it's everything you would want in a meal.
The next question is, what's your high point? What's your low point? And I've decided this is the moment where I'm going to actually answer as well. So Linda and I, for us, the low point was dealing with hypocrisy. So we told you guys, we're going to cook breakfast. We're going to cook dinner. You're on your own for lunch. When you come back, we'll give you snacks on the harder days. That's what we told you guys, right? It was in the description. Well, the first 2 days, there was no way to go out for lunch. So Linda and I would go into our bedroom, close the door, and just look at each other and say, what are we going to do? We have no algorithm for addressing this. There was one day that one of you guys went out and bought a bunch of food and brought it back. And everybody just started eating it. And there were a couple of times when Linda said, everybody's hungry. And all I've got are, you know, these 5 fish and these 12 loaves of bread, and I have to feed 5,000. She was feeling an awful lot like the story of the loaves and fishes in the New Testament as she was trying to deal with it all. And for her, that was an emotional crack moment, because everything we'd ever experienced, because we'd been there several times, everything we'd known was that we're going to get to go out every day. We're going to get to eat lunch every day on our bicycles because this environment tolerates it. When we had that lousy weather and we couldn't do that, for us, we were big times fish. We were fish out of water completely throughout that. Now, that said, the high points for Linda and I were when we came back and we realized that everybody had gotten into a groove. Some people were grabbing the cars and going to the cycling bars. Paul realized that he wasn't getting enough cycling in, so he would do the Calderates on his own. He ran the Calderates one time on his own. Other people were, you know, completely engaged with taking, like your wife, Connor, she was engaged with you as well as my wife. Lucy, Lenny's wife, she was engaged with everybody, as well as to making sure that her husband was being taken care of. Linda and I felt like our high point was the fact that everybody was truly engaged on the trip. There was nobody there who was staring at their watch, wondering how many more days, weeks it's going to be till this thing is over. people were truly like altered. People were changed by this trip in Spain. And for us, that was unequivocally the high point. So that's my low and high. Who wants to go next? What was their low and what was their high?
So, you know, I mentioned earlier about just that first ride, you know, with all of the adversity with getting on the bike and heading out and being cold and wet and feeling like I do not want to do this. You know, that really was a low point for me because I was really taking for granted the opportunity that God had given all of us to be there. You know, I have a physical body that I'm able to move efficiently and I'm able to ride a bike, you know, irrespective of where on earth it is. I absolutely was taking for granted the opportunity I had to just worship God by being out in creation and by enjoying all forms of weather. You know, my wife is a teacher at a school where their motto is, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing. And I certainly had bad clothing because I wasn't prepared. And then my other low moment, honestly, was when we pulled into Valencia, because that was the last ride of the trip. And it was a heck of a ton of fun riding our bikes to Valencia. But it was actually quite sad arriving because we knew right away that four people in the group were parting ways. Like it just was the end of the trip. And that really was a low point for me because, and Jordan and I'm sure he'll explain or talk more about this, but we had all bonded so much, like Angela had been saying, and we were really just in a groove of enjoying each day and enjoying all the different things we were able to do. And it sucked getting off that bike and knowing we were just going to load it into the bus and, you know, never get on it again in this context. Mm. So that really was for me a low point. And then high points, when we rode to Granadella Beach, which anybody listening can Google it, Granadella Beach in southeastern Spain. They filmed movies there. It was incredible. And you ride down through this national park to get to this beach that's in this cove surrounded. It's a pebble beach surrounded by all these pine trees. There's a cafe right there. After our photo shoot, because we all, of course, had our photo shoot out by the water. We all got to touch the Mediterranean, right? We got back on our bikes and I looked down at my bike computer and I was the one who was, in a sense, navigating for our group of four that we were riding with. And we had seen just on either side, there's just straight up cliffs, right? And we were able to see these big switchbacks going up with houses along the cliff, going up and up and up. And I zoomed out on the map on my bike computer and realized that we were all about to head up those switchbacks. And even doing that ridiculously steep climb with all the switchbacks, I mean, every single time you came to the edge where you could see over into the Mediterranean was better and better. Like that was such a high for me.
Good point, Connor. I would say the closest thing I had to a low point, Jeff, was when, you know, the second or third day of rain, and I was like starting to get concerned, like, oh, you know, we really don't know how this week is going to end up. And, but like going back to one of your key messages throughout that trip, especially at that moment where you probably said it better than me, but you said something like, it's God's plan and it's our job to embrace what we're given here. Right. So our low point was overtaken by great conversations and some fun games. And we just got to know each other even better, having that time to connect. But I would say that's the closest to my low point. But so my high point of the journey for me was, it was a moment I had on the last ride. So I briefly got separated from the group and I heard this message. And it was my brother saying, I'm proud of you, sis. So I lost my brother in October of last year, and he'd often say those words to me. So at that moment,
I'm trying to hold your hand. That's what I'm doing.
Thank you. But at that moment, I had this feeling of accomplishment that came over me, and I just remember thinking, I'm in Spain, cycling alongside national champions, Ironman competitors, ex-Navy service members, pro cyclists. And it's 15 months post knee replacement. So this is just an epic journey for someone who loves to cycle. And that was my high point.
Jordan, you're stuck going after that.
Oh my gosh. Thanks, Angela. Way to make it easy for me. You know, I'll start with my high point, which is on the last day on the ride to Valencia, Connor's low point was part of my high point because, like I said earlier, I do most of my training alone as I work a lot and, you know, I ride when I can. And we were able to get in a really nice peloton. And I never felt the rush of going 30 plus on a bike before with a group of people, 10 of us in a line, taking turns pulling. That was the most fun I've ever had on a bike. That was so cool. And I looked around, you know, as much as I could as I was watching that back wheel and just had a pause moment where I was like, this is why you train. This is why I'd get up at 5 a.m. and do rides with Jeff. Yeah. Cool. My low point, unfortunately, was getting back into the U.S. Me and a few of the other folks on the trip, all of our flights got canceled. So we were stuck in New York for 3 days, wandering the streets and all the restaurants were closed. Not as fun as actually being in Spain.
So guys, this is the last question. We're going to have to end it at this. What's next for all of you? Jordan or Connor?
Yeah, so similar to Jordan, I am currently training for the national championships for the sport of duathlon in standard and sprint distance. That's taking place in Dallas, Texas at the end of April. And then we're also traveling out to Romania, Lord willing. We'll see what happens. But the world championships for the sport of duathlon are taking place in Târgu Mureș, Romania in June. So that's what we're gearing up for. So we've got some
cool. Big. So if you get in the top three in Romania, you'll qualify for the Intergalactic Championships. We're going to be held in the third moon of Alpha Centauri in December of 2022.
Sweet. Let's take the Millennium Falcon. Let's take the X-Wing out there. For me, it's very similar to Connor. I am training for the National and the World Championships. My big hope right now is to stay injury-free. I was hit with a major hip injury last year, and I have a little bit of a small injury right now. And I want to get healthy, and I want to represent my country.
So, yeah, now that I've tackled Spain, I plan to enter into the world of aquabike. Spain helped kicked my level of confidence up a notch. An injury can be physically and mentally tough on anyone. So before training for Spain, I felt pretty defeated. But that's tough on somebody who's been physically active for over 30 years of their life. But I'm ready to go out and continue having the time of my life just competing and getting into aquabike.
Cool. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks for listening to this chapter of Threshold Stories, Crossing Thresholds, One Story at a Time. Get ready to cross more thresholds with me in 2 weeks. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can find me on LinkedIn or on my Facebook page at Jeff Gora Team USA.